Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, players need to start showing some respect to umpires. Was Ryan's mark tainted by Vardy antics? Is Brendan Bolton in trouble? But do Carlton woes go beyond a coach? And should West Coast have gone to the tribunal over Jetta?
That was out of bounds!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Tuesday, which means it's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, edition one in week 10 of the AFL season. Across from me, just waiting to unleash on... the implications from round nine is Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor from the Sunday Times. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer from the West Australian newspaper. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Quarters.
Always a bit going on, Duff, isn't there? Always.
Yes. Now, you were desperate to start with Dale Daisy Thomas.
Well, Dale, you're an idiot. Well, look, maybe we've invited this. By miking umpires up, it's very blokey out there. They refer to players by their nickname. But we've got to stop abusing umpires. You can't call them an effing cheat, Duff. I mean,
you particularly can't call them an effing cheat when it's the middle of the third quarter and you're 90 points behind already.
What influence is a boundary umpire going to have on that game? You've had your pants pulled down, Dale. I mean, seriously. And, you know, and we'll go back the week earlier with Dane Rampey. I wasn't happy with that. We've got to start showing a bit of respect to umpires. I mean, rugby. Imagine that happening on a rugby field. They refer to the ref as sir, and you're off. You're off. Don't speak to me like that. I'm running the show. So I just think we've got – I hope they throw the book at him, to be quite frank.
And so by when that, you I'm say saying, throw the book, you mean a big fine. You're not advocating a suspension here.
I wouldn't feel uncomfortable with the suspension, but I think he'll get a big fine. I think he'll get 10, 15 grand, something along those lines. I think it's worse than Rampey's.
Yep.
Of
course it is.
You're accusing them of cheating. You're dropping in the F-bomber. I just think it's disrespectful, Dale. And, you know, you're an AFL player. Let's not get beyond our station.
It's a character assassination on the umpire.
Yeah, it's just not right.
And we would stress at this point in this podcast that there is no suggestion of any wrongdoing on behalf of the umpire.
This is a
frustrated player.
Clearly not, Duff. Clearly not.
It's a frustrated player in a dire team performance, just letting his emotions get the better of him. And
I think we need to start throwing the book at these players.
So fines tend not to work where, you know, minor... offences at the tribunal are concerned. So do we need to, in a situation of blatant umpire abuse, do we need to say, okay, that's 2 weeks?
Absolutely. I think they might have created a rod for their back here with a Rampey fine last week. Although this is a little worse. So we'll see what plays out at the tribunal. The fact it was referred directly to the tribunal shows how serious they are about it. And I think he might find himself in a little bit of trouble here at a time when Carlton can least afford it.
Yep.
Least afford it. So you've let your team down as well.
So you touched on the umpire familiarity and that maybe we've helped create this situation. I know that Mick Malthouse is big on umpires should not get blokey and matey with players. That if it's, let's say it's Josh Kennedy gets a free kick, it should be West Coast number 17.
Yep.
Not your free kick, JK.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit too blokey for mine.
Yep.
And I'm not really big on coaching either, to be quite frank. The rules are the rules. If you don't know them by now, you don't deserve to be coached by an umpire.
Correct.
So I think we need to readjust the way we look at this. Players certainly have to take the initiative here.
Yeah, well, the AFL Players Association gets very proactive about certain things. This is one thing where a bit of self-regulation from the peak player body would come in very handy. I'll tell you one thing about the two. What I will say about the two coaches of the WA clubs, they're not big on potting the umps. Ross Lyon will repeatedly say, we work within, you know, it's beyond my control, so I'm not going to comment on that. And I think Adam Simpson tends to be quite similar, you know. And I think that helps sort of create a better environment, if you like, for umpires, where players understand, well, instead of whinging about something I can't control, maybe I should take better care of the things that I can control.
And good on Adam Simpson, while we're at it, for suggesting with Vardy's little push on Max Gawn after the mark of the century last weekend. You know, we don't stand for that as a club. I like that. Nor should they. I'm over this ruffling the hair, pushing blokes in the back after a free kick. It's wrong. Just get on with the game.
Especially when...
you've had your pants pulled down.
Vardy's had 5 touches. He's won 7 hit-outs. Gawn's won 56, 20 to advantage.
Yeah. Willie was in there too. Willie Rioli was in there having a go.
Yeah,
by the way, neither of you took the mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's Liam Ryan.
Pretty good mark.
Oh, yeah, look, it's as good as I've seen. And there have been some good marks this year too. Tommy Stewart probably considered himself a little stiff this week.
Yeah, picked the wrong time to take a hanger, really, didn't he?
That was great theatre, though. Coming down and just did you see him just having a bit of a laugh? More amongst taking the mickey out of himself, because all his teammates couldn't believe it either. Didn't think he found himself up there. How am I up here?
I was walking out of Optus Stadium on Friday night, mm-hmm. and I ran into Phil Magic Narkle.
Yep.
And he said he was sitting in the grandstand, and he actually saw the Ryan mark coming, because he said he actually moved the ball forward from the wing. Liam Ryan actually started the passage of play that ended with him. And he actually made 2 leads when he got to about half forward, was he completely ignored, and he got a bit miffed. So he sort of like semi-circled around and just lurked near the point post waiting for the ball to be kicked in long, and then jumped on Max Gawn's head.
Let's not forget, it was at a crucial time of the game too.
Absolutely. It was the one that put him back in front.
So, you know, well done, Liam Ryan.
Okay, so from the great to the very, very ordinary, from the first game of the weekend to the last game of the weekend, Carlton, the ramifications of that performance against GWS.
Okay, St Kilda, Essendon, Brisbane, the Western Bulldogs, that's their next 4 games. You'd want to be winning 2 of them, because I think that will mean we'll not coach next year. Cannot coach next year. I think we're beyond the green shoots now. We're beyond the... how much patience have Carlton supporters had? That list should be producing more. I mean, it was only 3 weeks ago, Duff, we were here in these very seats, and I was loud in Carlton for being more competitive. Those ugly losses were gone. Well, no, they haven't. They've had 2 since. So I think he's in a lot of trouble, and I think it's time now for a... I don't want to say real coach, because that's being disrespectful to Brendan Bolton. I think he's done a fantastic job in nurturing the kids coming up. And also, well done Carlton for having the kahunas to stick with him. Good on him. But I just think that now the way this is going, and I can't see any way out for them, and it's not just Bolton. I think you're talking your list manager. You're talking Soss, and you're talking your chairman. I think there's got to be more than one head rolling here.
Yeah, I know that's the... That is often the view of people because it's like a justice must be served sort of view. I reckon you leave the club completely rudderless when you do that.
Well, isn't it?
No, I just think they're too young.
So I think they've made decisions. Like, let's talk about the future rounder.
Does any of us think that in 2 years' time, when Walsh is 2 years older, Cripps is still there, Petrescu Seaton's 2 years older, Zach Fisher's 2 years older, Charlie Curnow, forward centre, is 2 years older, Harry Mackay is 2 years older, you've still got Marchbank, Plowman at the back end, you maybe pick up one more, you've still got McGovern in support. Does anyone think Carlton won't be okay?
You know what? 2 years ago we were having this conversation though, and I know that was it's only 2 years into their rebuild, but we're 4 years now, but... These are still close to 100-point losses, Duff. It's just not good enough.
I agree, but I think it takes longer than we appreciate.
Yeah, I know it takes a length of time, but I'm talking about the way they're losing.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And we had the same conversations about Fremantle last year. And then this year, when they're a year older, we haven't seen those bad losses yet.
I tell you what, one thing you'd say about Fremantle, I'm not sure if there were many players not goal side as they allowed GWS to be just about on every entry point last week.
Yeah.
There seems to be a total lack of discipline in terms of where you are structured around your stoppages.
So not responding to the coach.
Clearly. So where do you go from there? There's only one way to go.
Yeah, I don't mind the argument about the coach because I think Bolton's been there, since 2016? So 16, 17, 18, this will be 4 years. They haven't won many games. So therefore, I think he has to be in the spotlight. But I think the whole notion that, you know, for justice to be served, this guy has to go, that guy. You leave the club without figureheads and without...
Not if you replace them with better figureheads.
Yeah, but stability is a wonderful thing. I reckon there's 40 clubs.
Well, I reckon they've shown a bit. I reckon they've shown a lot of faith already.
I think that we look at their list and we think there is plenty of talent there, so therefore recruiting's been okay?
No question.
I think we all look at the Liam Stocker trade. Poor old Liam Stocker. He's going to have to carry that when it's not his fault. And he'll probably be a good, solid player. He may even be a very good player. But this kid, Matthew Rowell, who's the nominal number one draft pick at this stage, people are talking about him as a one-in-10-year player. And so, Carlton fans are going to look at Liam Stocker for a lot of his career and sort of go, well, you know, we could have Matthew Rowell, not you. But hopefully Liam Stocker becomes a very good player, has a very good career, and hopefully he doesn't let that sort of talk get to him.
You know, the most amazing thing about that game was GWS kicked 5 goals against Hawthorn the previous week. It took them 18 minutes to kick 6 against Carlton.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's the perfect storm, isn't it?
It was the perfect storm for them.
You get a very good team that's had a stinker, so they're hell-bent on redeeming themselves. They come up against a vulnerable young team who's due for a stinker, and those two things meet.
Yeah, I don't know if they were due for a stinker. Well, they had a stinker 2 weeks earlier, and then they redeemed themselves against Collingwood, and they produced that. And I'll repeat what I continually say. I'm really worried about Cripps. Spent more time in the midfield than any player. He must have some really, really sore shoulders because he has been carrying that team.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other thing is, from Carlton's perspective, is that GWS has now shown other teams what can be achieved if you can tag Paddy Cripps out of it. Well, Matt DeBoer went to Cripps.
What a great job too. 12, he restricted him to 12 and had 26 himself. He's going all right, Matty DeBoer.
So Paddy Cripps has obviously had a very bad day. You wouldn't expect if Matty DeBoer and Paddy Cripps played on each other 10 times, you wouldn't expect to get that result.
Well, he's probably winning 8 of them, maybe 9. But, you know, he must be exhausted. And not just physically, he must be mentally fatigued.
Mm.
This is a really hard job. And it's not an old head.
Should Shane Mumford have been in trouble for the... It was pretty reckless.
I don't reckon he had eyes on the ball. So Murphy's going to sit out 4 weeks. There's ribs. I didn't like it at all. And he's a big brute of a bloke.
Yeah, he likes to hurt people too.
Yeah, well,
and
mate,
I think
the old saying springs to mind, Duff, pick on your own side. Well, you know, Murphy was going for the pill. I'm not sure if he was.
I don't think he was.
So
I thought he was lucky.
Consider himself very lucky.
And on the flip side of that, I reckon West Coast should have gone to the tribunal for Lewis Jetta.
It was an unusual circumstance given, the
Smith thought the whistle had blown.
Exactly. Having said that, I'm not uncomfortable with the week, arms pinned, and we've all seen the action of the head. It was a bit ugly. I still think we've got to get the message out there. I'm not uncomfortable with them. You're probably right. They should have gone because what is there to lose?
I took a strong stand when Nick Natanui buried Carl Amon head first.
It's a bit different.
Different.
It's a bit clumsy rather than
very
anything.
Different. So I'm all for punishing dangerous tackles. This to me was an unfortunate accident. This to me was an 80-kilogram player who knew the whistle hadn't gone. So he's in a play-on situation, tackling a 93-kilogram player who thought the whistle had blown. The 80-kilogram player has to apply maximum force in his mind to make an effective tackle because he's tackling a bigger, stronger opponent, and the rest just follows. They go to ground, the guy hits his head, and he ends up with concussion, and Lewis Jetta ends up with a week. To me, it reeked of unfortunate accident, and I think they should have been able to go to the tribunal and argue unfortunate accident. I'm not sure why they didn't, actually.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, look, I'm not uncomfortable with that week. I'm not going to hang Jeddah either over it. But yep. I'm just not uncomfortable with it. I hate seeing that. Varko, you happy with that?
I thought a week's a bit light.
Yeah.
For that.
And, you know, I mean, great player, and it is Indigenous round. But that's plays no part in it. You do the crime, you do the time. Let's not get sentimental about it.
He's gone in very hard from the front, and there's contact with the head.
Got one of his own too.
That is, well, he got the bloke's brother.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah. He did.
So there's Ed Phillips and Tom Phillips. Yeah. Tom Phillips playing for Collingwood and Ed Phillips playing for St Kilda. He got them both. Now, clearly, he's got a vendetta against the Phillips family. No, I just think that's the one they tried to stamp out more than 10 years ago now, and I think that. That is a 2-week offence minimum, I think.
We should get into a few of the games, Duff. We've talked through GWS and Carlton, 93-point victory there to the Giants. Richmond, 36-point winners over Hawthorn, pretty emphatic. It was interesting, Hawthorn, the wall, how Richmond got through the wall, and that was by very, very clever and skillful hand passes, short kicks. They just got through. Dusty always seems to do it to the Hawks. Just decided this is the week where I remind everyone how good I am. He was clearly the difference. What a tremendous game. Up to halftime, he had won the game for them.
So up to halftime, I think he'd had close to 20 possessions. I reckon 13 or 14 contested possessions before halftime.
Just his ability to slip tackles, find the right option always. A couple of times, you know, he just found himself down the forward line. You knew he was going to mark it. You knew he was going to goal it. And Hawthorn didn't have that answer. So that's just, I think you saw the difference between a team that I think is still in contention, despite the absence of key players, and a team that's going okay, but is still in about that maybe 6th to 8th to 12th on the ladder, which is Hawthorn.
Yeah.
Clearly, there's a difference between the two. Richmond's a class above at the moment.
What about the Tom Lynch, James Sicily byplay?
Oh, what about the... look, it's always going to happen with Sicily, isn't it? I'll ask you one. I'm just trying to remember. It was McIntosh. So what's your call on? So Lynch takes the hang. McIntosh is held. Should the mark trump the free kick?
The mark should always trump the free kick for me.
Yeah. You're going to get the goal anyway, so I think the mark should trump.
Yeah.
Sports.
Umpires tend to pay it the other way. Well, I think the umpire gets... It may be that the umpire gets penalised for an error if the free kick isn't paid. So they probably go with what protects their
record. Yeah, exactly.
What protects their
record.
That's
what I was thinking at the time. Yeah. I was thinking exactly that.
But I think the mark, if a player's been good enough to take a mark, I think the mark should trump the free kick.
Port Adelaide defeated Gold Coast 38 points.
This was tight for two and a half quarters.
It was 44 inside 50s to 9 after half time. Mm. 8 players with fewer than 10 games, the Gold Coast. Yeah. I think that's it in a nutshell. Fantastic performance up to half time. Port was just able to run away with it in the second half. The usual suspects for Port, including Rosie, who just continues to shine. Jesus, special, that kid.
Okay. At this stage of the year, your 1-2-3 rising star.
So Rosie...
In order.
Okay, Rosie wins it.
Really?
I think so. Walsh is second. Ooh, who is third at the moment?
Have to be Sydney Stack, wouldn't it?
See, he's in negotiations too. He'll be signed up long term soon, I think. Look, I'll go with Stack. He has been pretty impressive. There's a few. It's a good year for Rising Star. I think it's a pretty competitive year, actually. Mm. You're going Walsh to win it, aren't you?
I think Walsh won. Yeah. I think Rosie two, and I think Stack is my third. Yeah, that's the way I would go.
Yeah, I think it's by the way, it's reckless our Waverley star too for me, for Walsh and Rosie. I've just got Rosie is our Waverley star.
Bone Crusher.
Oh, Bone Crusher, that's right.
Bone Crusher
and our Waverley star.
It was
star.
Bone Crusher that raced into equine immortality.
That's right.
Quarters.
It was reckless and golden black.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
That was the Melbourne Cup.
So I've got Rosie is Bone Crusher just at the moment. But Walsh not far behind.
Let's go to Collingwood versus St Kilda. Now, this was an interesting game as well, Quarters. Like, the Saints were in this until well into the game, and the Pies, a little bit like they were the previous week, sort of cruised, like they did against Carlton, and then opened the throttle.
Six goals to one in the last turn.
And blew the game wide
interesting,
open.
Interesting. Majacek, another four, too. Gee, he's a good player. He's got a lot of talent in that forward line. Interesting comment about side bottom over the weekend. He's so underrated that he's rated. It's a fair comment, isn't it? I mean, you and I don't underrate him, but a lot of people do. They've got so many stars, Collingwood. He tends to just... But West Coast is the only team that tags him, too. How about you start tagging him?
Yeah, well, Richmond didn't tag him in the prelim last year.
Exactly, and what happened?
41.
Yeah.
So West Coast tagged him in the grand final, and the digits in 41 were reversed, 14.
Exactly.
Probably the difference in the game.
So there you go. We know what to do going forward. But side bottom, it was a shellacking in the end. It was you sort of blink, and that's what Collingwood can do to you.
Yeah, well, they've got so many different avenues to goal, haven't they? And that's the beauty of their forward line. If we're going to do rankings, we've just done the Rising Star. Go back to the 2017 National Draft, and I would argue that so far, not necessarily the way it'll end up, but so far the clear two top picks are Stevenson and Norton. Who's your one and two?
Geez, that's hard. Oh. I'm going to go Norton.
As your one.
Well, I am because
he's the key.
This is nothing against Stevenson, who is a ripper. I just think that they're probably level pegging, but I just see more upside to Norton.
Mm.
I think he could be on a plateau of very, very elite, where I think Stevenson's going to be just a very good footballer for a long period of time. You know, there's a difference. He's a very clever player, Stevenson, too. Not just the ability, but his positioning and his reading of the play. Very, very clever. Norton, I think, is just playing those key positions. And
Norton is...
against Jets, too.
Norton is a player you're going to be able to build an attack around.
Yep.
And Stevenson is going to be a very valuable member of an attack. That's probably the difference. I'm with you. I think the key position player gets the top billing. Now, just on that, and this comes back to Carlton and my point about Carlton, that it takes a while. The top five in that draft, I don't think anyone thinks any of them won't be good players, but they're all struggling a bit. You know, Rayner had three touches on the weekend.
Second-year Blues, yeah.
Paddy Dow, you know, part of that
yeah.
Carlton midfield that's getting chopped up. Luke Davies-Uniacke has been dropped out of the North Melbourne team. Everyone thinks he's going to be a good player. Chera and Brayshaw have been pretty solid and very consistent through the middle for Fremantle. They're starting to labour a little bit. So it's tough.
Yeah, it is a very tough game. And I don't think the players you've just mentioned, they're all going to be around for a hell of a long time.
Yeah, and they're all going to be good players.
At the point,
I think they've all shown enough to tell us that they're going to be good players. But it is very tough. And you wait till about the fourth year before you really know how far they're going to go and how good they're going to be.
Other Saturday games, how did you see... Well, I know how you saw Freo's performance against Essendon. A kick and a bit to the good Essendon, but execution by foot, again, letting Freo down. And we're not just talking about in front of goals.
No. It was the inside 50 kick, I think, as much as anything. I was pleased that Ross Lyon came out and acknowledged it, because for a long time, Ross has talked about effort. You know, we gave great effort. And often he's talked about that after some of their more error-riddled performances. So I think it was pleasing that he basically said, look, our skill execution is a problem and I can't keep coming in here and talking about how we're going to improve it. They actually need to improve it. Interesting comment, though,
yeah,
where he said players have to come in their own time and basically work on their craft.
So now, what he's saying is that we don't have time to work on their skill. We have time to work on the tactical side of the game.
The mechanics of the game,
but not the skill side of the game.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm pretty sure a few other clubs do that. But, yeah, so it's incumbent on the players, given the restrictions now on how much time they're allowed to spend at the club and how much time they need to spend away from the club. And I think he said, I was looking out my window and I saw Jesse Hogan doing some extra goal-kicking practice.
Didn't quite get any traction on that.
1-4, I think, was it?
1-4. Yeah. So, yeah, Jesse's going through a difficult phase at the moment.
Now, we had this comment earlier, Duff, about... You know, Dunstall's and the Lockett's of yesteryear, spending an hour or two after training in the 70s and 80s, just honing their goal-kicking skills. Why don't they do it now?
Part of it's the strength and conditioning coaches limit the amount of times a player can actually kick the ball during any given week, because they view injuries like osteitis pubis as kicking-related. So there's that handbrake on the whole process. But I do agree with you. I think that clubs like West Coast include skill drills in the main program, whereas a club like Fremantle, where the coach is very structure-based. So Fremantle will always structure up very well. It is usually their skill execution that lets them down. You know, the other thing, Quarters, and I included this in my column on Monday, is that sometimes it's the players out there organising themselves properly so the good ball user is the one on the outside that ends up on the end of the chain of possession. And sometimes it's also about players making decisions that, to a layman, look a bit selfish, but they're basically saying, no, someone's got to hit Jesse Hogan on the lead. It's more likely to be me than you, so bugger off, I'm having this kick. The classic example of that was Ablett in the game against Western Bulldogs on the weekend. Brian Myers ran up alongside him.
Yeah.
And little Gaz just went, sorry, pal, I'm inside 50 with my belly button pointed at the goals. No one is more chanced to kick this goal than me.
And he was right.
Well, no, he missed.
Yeah.
But this decision was still a good decision. If I'm a Fremantle forward, I want the ball in Michael Walters' hands and I want the ball in David Mundy's hands.
Yeah. David Mundy, 90% efficiency at the weekend. He's having some sort of year. I think he's ranked number 5 AFL player ratings now.
Oh.
Not bad for a bloke of his vintage.
So 34 disposals, 17 in contests, and you go at 90%. Now, when you're winning that much contested ball, that would usually put up about a 10% dent.
Because you're under a lot of pressure.
In your efficiency, because you're always having two blokes trying to kill you when you get...
So what sort of a year is he having?
Outstanding.
Yeah, off the chart year, isn't he?
Outstanding, yeah. He would be alongside Nathan Fyfe in their best and fairest. And when you think of Fyfe standing in the game, for Mundy at 33 to be that good still, that is one hell of an achievement, I think.
So let's keep him in the middle.
Yeah, for as long as his body holds up. Mm. Absolutely. I mean, their midfield isn't great, and if you took him out of it, it would put a massive dent in it.
We mentioned Geelong. Geelong, 44-point winners over the Western Bulldogs in Geelong. Just reeling off another debutant, Darcy Fort, kicks the lazy three. Going all right, the Cats.
They are.
Although there are, as Chris Scott has alerted over the weekend, there are some areas of concern. Perhaps they're wallpapering over a few cracks because of their efficiency.
So they're a bit like West Coast, aren't they? Like,
yeah.
The stats...
It's a good comparison, actually.
The contested side of the game, the stats aren't great. They're not getting as many forward half turnovers as they wanted because they brought in Luke Dalhouse and Gary Rowan to become a more of a forward half team.
Yep.
So, but I also wonder whether they are so efficient... And when they go inside, they score, that they don't get those repeat entries, so they're not getting the opportunity to turn the ball over.
I think
over.
There's a bit of that in it.
I think that it's like putting statistics in golf. You know, a guy might go around 18 holes and have 24 putts, and everyone says, wow, he must have putted really well. But the reality is he chipped to within 2 feet, you know, 14 times. I think there might be a bit of that about Geelong at the moment. Certainly there's a bit of that about West Coast. I did feel that... Of teams that won on the weekend, West Coast, Collingwood and Geelong were all wins for efficiency over effort. And obviously that dovetailed in with Ross Lyon on the flip side of that where...
And where are they on the ladder?
Lack of efficiency sort of cost them.
And they're all... And they are all up at the pointy end.
The pointy end, yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's what efficiency... Sydney, interesting win over North Melbourne. Looked like they were sort of coasting, and then all of a sudden it was sphincter a bit tight there. But
well, your sphincter usually naturally gets tight with the wind whistling around your ears in Hobart doesn't it?
So look, that was a good win. I think 11 players with fewer than 50 games under their belt. So Sydney, I think he'll take a lot out of that, John Longmire. A couple of players worthy of note.
Hewitt. Great tagging job.
Yeah, I think Rampy on Ben Brown and also Papley, 4 goals in an 11-goal game. So that's some sort of a game.
Papley's an annoying little bugger, isn't he?
He's a good sort of player you want in your team.
He's a very good player.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't think they're going to be any great shakes this year, but that's a win for the true believers if you love the bloodstained angel stuff.
What about the game of the round up at the Gabba?
Oh.
Crows v Lions.
Brisbane 7-point win. Well, I know it was a 1-point win, but there was a goal kick right on the siren. So, look, it wasn't like that sort of a game. But, look, it was a terrific contest. Adelaide going along really well. Brisbane led by, again, Lachie Neal, who's got to be polling a few threes in the Charlie Award.
39 disposals. I think he had 12 clearances.
84% efficiency.
Yeah. The one thing about Lachie, though, also, and this is going to be an interesting one this week. So if you're Fremantle, and we'll talk about this more on Thursday, if you're Fremantle, given that Lachie Neal has won two Doig medals, left your club, do you tag Lachie Neal? Because no one else does.
No. Well, they don't generally tag, do they, Freo? Yeah, I think you probably have to look at it.
So, but everyone else that plays Brisbane pretty much tags Zorko. It's going to be an interesting decision for Ross Lyon. Usually Ross Lyon, I reckon, gets the target for the tag pretty right, although he probably could have gone to Zach Merritt on Saturday night, given the impact that Zach Merritt had. But I have a feeling he'll let Lachie go. And I have a feeling that they'll try and control the game well enough for Lachie to get his possessions backward to centre and maybe still have a high possession game, but not have great impact and not have great scoreboard impact. That'll be, I reckon, the way he might go on that.
So he's coming back. He'll get a few boos, but I think they'll be sort of respectful boos. He's a much-loved character, a couple of Doig medals under his belt, so I think he'll cop what you're going to get. But
yeah, there'll be a bit of both.
And just finally, West Coast against a pretty good Melbourne. That's the best I've seen Melbourne for some time. They didn't win the game, but they certainly left thinking they're on the right track. Again, it was efficiency, really.
Absolutely.
Against inefficiency that got them over the line in the end.
So you lose, if you're West Coast, right, you lose contested possession 141 to 158, so that's minus 17, minus 5 at centre clearances, minus 15 in inside 50s, minus 4 in scoring shots. You're outscored in 3 of the 4 quarters. You still win by 16 points.
Mm.
And it was all about what Melbourne missed and what West Coast nailed, wasn't it? You know, Garlett misses on the run from 30 metres. Tommy McDonald should have kicked 2, didn't kick any. Christian Petrarca, I think, was probably the most wasteful offender of all the Melbourne players. Should have had a huge game.
Always is.
Probably should have kicked 4 or 5.
Generally is.
And ended up kicking 2.
Those West Coast figures, it just obviously, when they get it right, it's going to be interesting. And there's a bloke who might be returning soon who might have some influence on some of those.
Yes, Nick Natanui.
Just one other comment. Clayton Oliver.
Yep.
What do you think of David King's comments that he's sort of playing football, protecting himself from the contest a bit? I found that bewildering because this is a bloke who laid, what, another 12 tackles at the weekend following 18 the week before. It doesn't look like he's playing bruise-free footy to me.
I reckon, and I'm kind of like picking up a bit on something Mick Malthouse observed about Oliver to me. Nothing about the way he goes at the contest. I think there's nothing wrong with that. Overuses the ball a bit.
Yeah.
I think handballs sometimes when he should kick. And I think that applies to Melbourne generally. And they controlled the corridor for long periods of the game on Friday night, but they were going into their attacking 50 without a lot of poise because they were always handballing, play on, play on, play on, play on, you know, short, rapid-fire handball chains through the middle of the ground. One of the beauties of West Coast style, the kick-mark game, is that you can alter the tempo of your attacking move and you can attack with a little bit more vision and poise. Mm. And I think that showed up a little bit in the final outcome. There was a moment quarters in the third quarter where I reckon Melbourne got to 19 points clear. And at that point in the game, I felt they really should have been, given the balance of play they'd had, they really should have been 6 goals clear.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether it would hurt them. And in the end, it did.
Mm. I saw another game at the weekend too. It's pretty impressive. 57 plus at the Optus Stadium Sunday night. So just a shout out to Perth Glory and Perth Glory fans. You didn't win when it really counted, but what a great spectacle. It was a different sort of atmosphere, Duff. It was to an AFL crowd.
Yep.
A lot more joyful. Not that there's no joy in AFL games, but it tends to be a little bit one-sided over here. But it was just...
You probably got your theatre goers.
There was about 5 Sydney supporters that I counted, but there were theatre goers. There was a lot of singing and it was just a very different environment. I certainly love being there and well done to Perth Glory for a magnificent year. And hopefully they can... they didn't do much wrong this year. Hopefully they can go one step further and well done to everyone for filling up the stadium.
Absolutely. One thing in sport I've never understood is the contempt that losing grand finalists are held in. Like, I think you've done so much right.
Well, they won the right trophy. They didn't want the toilet seat.
They've done so much right to get there. You know, beaten on the day by a very good team, by a very strong outfit.
Well, they were beaten. The VAR was not right in the first half. So if Sydney had have not won that game, it would have been a travesty. Yeah. The better side deserved to win.
Yeah. But you're right, 56,000 at Optus. That is a massive opportunity for soccer. If they can, if Perth Glory can get those extra 20,000 people, each one of those to come to three games next year, that will be a huge boost to their attendances at Perth Oval, which will be a huge boost to the atmosphere there. And that club will get up and running and back to where it was back in the days when Bernd Stanger was coaching.
Bernd Stanger. Can I please, I cannot mention Bernd Stanger without mentioning his famous comment to our mate Tomo, Michael Thompson.
Which was?
After a pre-season, hadn't seen him for the you know, a couple of months, and Tomo's getting out of his car and Bernd Stanger's getting out of his car at the same time. And Tomo said he looked really brown and fit. And I said, geez, Bernd, you're looking well. And he said, Michael, I am strong and I am powerful. Good old Bernd.
I don't reckon you get that out of Brendan Bolton right now. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back on Thursday to run through round 10 and try and pick some winners for you. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. Look forward to talking to you on Thursday.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.